Welcome to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. Glad to have you with us. We're going to have an interesting show today. Going to be speaking with Jennifer Mattingly. She is Director of Government Affairs for Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. And then Andy Medici from the Federal Times is going to join us later on in the discussion. Jennifer, thank you for coming up here. Parking is so difficult in this neighborhood now. Whenever we try to get a guest in studio, we pray that they either don't know the drill or they do know the drill.
Right, so they don't know what's coming.
Yeah.
I'm always happy to be here. And since we have are on the show, you know, here and other shows frequently, I know the drill of the...
Yes.
Closed off roads, so.
Yeah, walk is the
exactly.
best way to get it. Jennifer, an awful lot to talk about, but I've become interested in the fact that in 2 months, what I call the official start of the lame duck season begins. The president will have less than 2 years to serve, and he will, of course, still be in office in January of 2017, but the election is coming up in 2016. This is the time when thousands and thousands of political appointees start looking around for greener pastures, safe havens. Do you have a handle as to how many political and non-career jobs there are that are at the disposal of any incoming administration?
Well, there's about 6,000, give or take, political appointments throughout the government. And these run everything from folks confirmed by the Senate, which is going to be a very different type of political appointment because president nominates them, Congress, you know, Senate has to vote. And then there are your Schedule Cs, your non-career SES. Those folks are more serving at the pleasure of the agency head. So they're not going in front of the Senate. But they are appointments that are politically driven. And so they can come and go in an at-will status.
Right, and I think they use the term confidential, too. For example, mm-hmm. if you were a chauffeur, a driver to a cabinet agency head, that might be a Schedule C job, but it's not the big bucks you think of. It's not the six-figure job.
Right, and a lot of these folks in your Schedule C positions, in some of the other political appointments and non-career SES, they function like career federal employees during the term of their job. So you wouldn't necessarily know, except if you knew what the positions were, that they were political appointees.
I've known many over the years, both career at that level and political at that level. And where they come from is interesting. The Interior Department recently, and they've had an awful lot of people from New Mexico and Colorado, because that's sort of their preserve. And the secretary tends to come from the West. I don't think there's been an Eastern one in 20 or 30 years, you know.
That's a good point.
So that there's certain things that come with the job. Sometimes, as I understand it, these politicals are come from the White House. The White House will say to Justice or to Interior or something, Jennifer Mattingly has been a good soldier. Give her a job at this level, and that's the way it's done. Sometimes, I understand, it's done through the cabinet secretary or his or her designee, and sometimes it's lower down. Is that the way it works?
Yeah, that's really there, and that's both the good and the bad of political appointments, is it allows the president, it allows an administration to put in folks that they want to see in these positions. You know, on the flip side, it's, if you think back to the 1800s, it's that spoil system
yeah.
of giving people, are you giving a job because you donated money, because you did something? You like to think that a vast majority of these are really well-qualified folks, and they're there because they're interested in serving the country.
Yeah, in some cases, though, it is maybe give somebody's nephew who's having trouble, give them a job, give them a safe thing. And, of course, we sort of figure now that for expensive posts such as Paris, such as London, Court of St. James, you're looking for wealthy donors makes sense because they need to spend a lot of their own money in entertaining in those posts.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, there's a lot of places that are not cheap to live in that
yeah.
folks are going to. And you know, I mean, that's just part of the culture, too, is that's how it's built up, is you come into office and those are the jobs that you hand to your top donors. And so there's sort of an accepted way of doing things, and that's part of it.
Right, and closer to home, in our federal family, John Barry, former director of the Office of Personnel Management, is U.S. Ambassador to Australia. He's in Canberra now. And Barry's a guy that worked in government mm-hmm. virtually all of his life, including the time at OPM, but he's considered a good person, a capable administrator, and a good soldier. So he fits in. While he's not a career Foreign Service officer, he is a lifetime federal worker. Almost.
And he understands the culture. He understands the system. And that's sort of the hope, is that those folks are who you're moving forward. And putting out there.
Yeah. So the people who want to get find out where these jobs are, you go to something called Policy and Supporting Positions, better known to the real world as the Plum Book.
That's right.
And the Plum Book comes out every year, every presidential year, every 4 years when a new president's coming in, or if it's an incumbent president, Congress still puts it out as a courtesy to the administration. And it says, for instance, it might list your name at Voice of America at a certain level, and it shows how your name, how much you make, how long you've been there, that sort of thing. And it's a very good guide for people who are job hunting.
That is one use for it. I hadn't thought about it that way, but it really does. I mean, it tells you where the political appointments are in the government. Yeah. So if that's something people are interested in, it's USA Jobs.
And I looked at it again this morning, and it is in code. It's the Da Vinci Code has got nothing on the Plum Books code. But hey, you wanted to talk about the Department of Homeland Security. I guess the question is where to begin. I think many Americans maybe aren't aware of it. They don't live and breathe the government the way we do. But for hundreds of years, or since the Lincoln administration, the establishment of the Secret Service, mainly as an outfit to fight counterfeiting, but incidentally to guard the president, that mission, of course, has shifted. But for more than 100 years, it was under the Treasury Department, and the headquarters was literally right across the street from the White House in the Treasury building. With 9/11, which changed everything, we had suddenly the Department of Homeland Security, which went from zero to third largest federal agency almost overnight. One of the agencies that it got was, for better or worse, was the Secret Service. And now it seems like we're having not daily revelation, surely, but the situation in Colombia, Cartagena, the situation in the Netherlands, the guy jumping over the fence a couple of weeks ago, he's the 15th person to jump over the White House fence since President Obama took office. And I've down there almost every other day. You're down there every day. Yep. That's a tough fence to jump.
It is. It's not easy, but it's not, part of me wonders, and, allegations right now aside, how much of this have we just not heard about over the years, and how much are we just hearing more about now? So it's hard to compare over the years, but Secret Service, there's a whole bunch of agencies that were separate divisions, either other places or standalone, that got put into the Department of Homeland Security because they had this overarching mission of security. And so it's is that the appropriate place for them? Was that, is there this push of culture, and maybe that's made the mission so broad instead of focusing on one or two things? And sometimes I think that's sort of the fear with government agencies. Do you have a very narrow tailored mission, or do things get really diffuse as we have these big threats that come across our desk?
Well, 10-12 years ago, there was a big fight, and many people wanted the FBI to absorb the Drug Enforcement Administration, FBI, DEA. Very different cultures, very different missions, and one of the arguments was bring the DEA in and we'll eliminate some overlap or whatnot. And the argument that prevailed, surprisingly, I thought, because it seemed like everybody was for it, was the DEA said, we only enforce one law. And there may be several laws under that, but it's illegal drugs, whereas the FBI has literally thousands of federal jurisdictions that it must touch. Do you think something like that could have happened here?
Well, I think it's possible, and I think that's certainly something people need to look at, is when you get a mission that was so narrowly tailored, and then you start putting people out on different missions if you're not training them, not giving them the resources. And, I don't know if that's the case here with Secret Service, but it's certainly something people should be looking at, is what led to these issues. Sometimes we have this run to, it's the gotcha culture.
Yep.
We got you, you did something wrong, now we're going to stick your head on a pike. Well, let's find out why, and let's go look back at some of the mundane issues. Did they have the budget? Did they have the mission? Did they have the right people in place? Those aren't sexy issues, but that's what you do to run a business.
Well, you made an interesting point before the show, which I hadn't thought of. This very recently, President Obama, I think, was in Atlanta, and he was in an elevator with a man. Secret Service asked him to turn, I don't know why he was in there with him, but they asked him to turn his cell phone off. He refused for whatever reason. There was an altercation, if you will. Turns out he's a government contractor. So he had a right to be there. I believe he was, in fact, part of the security detail. But as the president left the elevator and as the Secret Service guys that stayed behind to interview this fellow were talking to him, his contractor boss came up to him, fired him on the spot, and said, "Give me your gun." And the Secret Service said, "What?" And he was in the elevator with the president with a presumably loaded gun. He was a security type. And we've had the Navy Yard shooter, who was a government contractor, not a government employee, but a government contractor. And he killed, 13 people, I believe?
Yeah.
Any comments on that?
Well, you know, I think that's another one of those interesting questions is, where are things appropriate? Where is it appropriate to have contractors? Is it in our security apparatus? Is it in our, you know, cyber apparatus? Is it in some of the internal functions? Maybe it is for some agencies and maybe it's not. And that we had that conversation years ago with the Clinton administration. I mean, they started this whole contracting out issue during the National Performance Review. And it grew during the Bush administration. And I don't think we've had some conversations of insourcing versus outsourcing, but I don't think we've had that conversation on the granular level. Which occupations does it make sense in?
Well, a lot of people think it's just a sleight of hand because you're spending as much or more than you did when the job was done in-house, but it doesn't show up on a particular piece of paper. So a president, a congressman, somebody, an agency head can say, I'm spending 30% less than I was last year, because on the other sheet of paper, which you don't see, they're paying the contract employees. And maybe, you know, the idea was during the Clinton years to slim the workforce, farm out what they called overhead jobs, which were six or seven occupations, which they did. But now maybe you need to look at accountability. Are these people safe?
Well, and there's a lot of conversation of accountability of federal employees, and there isn't that same, you know, I guess the worry is when you have a contract workforce, and again, depends on what the field is and who the person is, but the agency is not the one taking personnel actions against that person. You know, it's their boss in the contracting world. So do you have the same levels of accountability and understanding of who your people are? And there are three times as many contractors as there are government employees. And so I've always personally found it interesting that when people talk about shrinking the federal workforce and we need to get rid of all these government bureaucrats, we don't talk about the real full picture. And if you're really making a business case of, do you need more employees for this section or do you need them in this agency? You have to look at the full picture, and maybe you do need all those employees. But until you have that conversation.
We'll talk about that in a second. The producer, Lauren Larson, is giving us the eye here. We need to take a short break. We'll be right back on federalnewsradio.com.
The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by Airbus Group.
With the November 4th midterm elections coming up, Defense Department officials are taking steps to ensure absentee voting is easier for service members, their families, and overseas citizens. DOD, in connection with the Federal Voting Assistance Program, is raising awareness and reminding voters of important deadlines. They're also reminding service members who haven't done so they need to register to vote and they need to request an absentee ballot. I'm J.J. Green.
1,000 feet up, an Airbus Lakota helicopter helps the National Guard respond to wildfires out west. Above the clouds, an Airbus A350 airliner comfortably connects U.S. travelers to cities around the world. Higher still, Airbus satellites transmit high-resolution images of infrastructure developments down to the ground, where an Airbus explosives detection system scans a suspicious package for threats. Airbus Group. We connect and protect at every level.
And now it's time for another FedGuard Factor, career essentials for federal employees.
For those of you who know how important it is to insure your career with a professional liability policy, there's a good chance you're getting ready to renew an existing policy. Now is the perfect time to visit FedGuard.com to check out top-flight professional liability packages starting at less than $300 a year. And don't forget, managers, supervisors, and all law enforcement officers are entitled to up to 50% reimbursement of policy costs.
Learn more at FedGuard.com. That's FedGuard.
This is the Defense Health Modernization Report provided by Leidos. Freedom to think forward.
The Department of Defense is seeking a partner to help modernize its healthcare system and transition to an off-the-shelf electronic health record solution to keep pace with rapid advances in health IT. The goal of the new system is to improve healthcare delivery informed by the most complete information wherever and whenever it's needed, from the Pentagon to the theater of war. One team pursuing the contract, the Leidos Partnership for Defense Health, provides a secure, interoperable, modern open system architecture ready to deploy worldwide to meet the military community's needs for the program.
Formerly known as SAIC, Leidos has a 44-year legacy of tackling the toughest technical and scientific challenges facing our world, from developing healthcare systems for our veterans to advanced protection against cyber threats, giving their customers the freedom to think forward. Visit Leidos.com to learn more. That's Leidos.com.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
Hey, Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. I'm talking with Jennifer Mattingly. She is Director of Government Affairs for Shaw, Bransford & Roth, a very well-known. How would you describe them? It's a law firm that is for federal workers.
That's right, really focused on federal employment law and looking into all the different issues that federal employees might face.
Yeah, so you have your finger in many pies.
Absolutely.
And I know you're intrigued by this Department of Homeland Security's the situations mm-hmm. we've been reading about, including the Secret Service. And the Washington Post had a page one story, I believe it was last week now, saying that morale there was terrible, that it was there was high turnover, that a lot of the jobs weren't being filled. And it seems to me that's like the 900th such story I've read. You know,
yeah.
I never read one that said morale has never been better, you know. But, you know, it always seems to be getting worse in this and leaderless and whatnot. But awful lot of people said the story was very accurate.
You know, it's interesting because it is the same conversation we've been having for pretty much since the department was created. I mean, I dug up some SEA testimony from 2009 on this very issue about political appointees and morale. And, you know, we're hearing people talk about morale in the Secret Service and with agents there and turnover. And so it's endemic in the agency. But what nobody's talking about is why. You know, the Post article talked about political appointees. Lights are on. No one's home in a lame duck. People start leaving. They start searching for other jobs. And so things are vacant. But you know, the secretary of DHS had to come back to that and said, no, we're going to get all the positions filled. We're filling those. And then I saw an interesting article from Howard Risher today where he brought up some good points, too. And I think that's some of what I've seen over the years is that some of the problems, political appointees are so far removed from your rank and file federal employees. So while they have broad ability to manipulate the strategy and goals of the agency in some respects, and really they'll affect the senior executives or some of the upper level managers, your day-to-day employees, that morale is based off of, you know, do they have the right tools that they need to do their job? Are they treated fairly? Do they understand and have the line of sight to their mission? And that's the piece when people talk about agency performance, if agencies aren't doing well, if agencies aren't functioning, we always forget about the people piece. And I always tell people, I get frustrated. It's one of my biggest frustrations on the Hill when people are yelling for agency accountability. If you don't train your people, if you don't treat them well, if you don't give them the things that they need to do their job and feel like part of the workforce, your agency's never going to perform. You don't have numbers without people.
Both of my sons have had a myriad of jobs, and they keep getting better and better, but they both say that the toughest part of any job they've ever had is managing people.
Mm-hmm.
It's an art.
It is an art, and you're not born with it. It's certainly not something people grow. I really don't. You don't hear little kids in kindergarten, when I grow up, I want to
be a manager.
But you know, that's why you need to train these people. You gotta select the right people. You gotta train them and keep developing them.
Well, we shall see. I suspect we'll be reading this again and again and again. But you think there may come a day when there will be a call to put the Secret Service back in the Treasury assuming it strayed from its basic mission, and nobody's saying that, but if it has, maybe focus it by getting it back in there and literally across the street from the White House.
You know, reorganization is hard. I think the reason we saw DHS created was because we had a major event with the terrorist attacks of 9/11. I think absent major events in this day and age, and not just for reorganization of the government, but for a lot of things, getting policies done, it takes a major event. And so until something like that happened that focuses people, I don't think we'll see much change.
And it takes a while. And if you heard the news broadcast before our show came on the air, one of the news items was they're going to be refurbishing St. Elizabeth's Hospital as a new home for the Department of Homeland Security. It's 2014, this year. The event was in 9/11, and it's just now getting its own consolidated headquarters building.
Yeah, well, part of that was funding. They didn't, you know, funding over the years has gone up and down. We've had sequestration. We've had all these issues that, unfortunately, you don't do government in a vacuum. And so you've got whatever's going on in the outside world, whatever's going on with Congress, and that it really dictates some of the speed of direction.
Well, and also, too, you've got the political pressures. Everybody wants something like Homeland Security, the new FBI headquarters. They want it in their county, in their congressional district. And that's put the Democratic delegation from Maryland and Virginia at odds here.
Absolutely. And some of this is it brings jobs, it brings people, it brings money into the states. And so, again, that's one of those outside factors that really drives government decisions.
Yeah, and the federal funding, if you're a child of a federal employee, the school district gets certain more. So there's a lot of advantages to having particularly a high-level operation like the FBI or like Homeland Security in your backyard.
Yeah, and I can see that, for those two agencies, that's been really a big issue. And I think if any agency was looking to relocate, you'd see that same sort of jockeying go on.
Yeah, okay. What else are you working on?
Well, obviously lame duck with Congress is coming up.
Yeah.
So they'll be back after the elections. And this time it's a biggie because for those of us that are waiting on bills to move or not move, in my case, which is typically where it is, if the Senate flips, because this time control between Democrats and Republicans is a toss-up. And so if that flips, it dictates what Congress does in the last month, the 6 weeks of session.
I have a theory I'd like to try out on you. Eric Holder has announced his resignation, and he will leave when his successor has been confirmed. Now, that's probably, they're probably going to name a successor sooner rather than later, probably before the lame duck session starts. If the Senate does flip, so if you have the House controlled by the Republicans and the Senate controlled by the Republicans starting in 2015,
yep,
then it might be a way for the administration to get somebody in there while the Democrats still control the Senate, who would be less objectionable than in 2015. Does that make any sense?
Absolutely. I mean, the first thing I said, a colleague and I were talking at the law firm when we first heard about Holder's resignation. First thing we said is this timing is not random.
Right.
I mean, they're looking at the possibility of Senate flipping. And so you'll see somebody nominated, I think, right before Congress comes back in to set up that confirmation.
Right. And they might be confirmed now, whereas they would not be confirmed
Absolutely.
After January 1.
You weigh that balance. Do you want a nasty confirmation fight and risk having the position open for an extended length of time, or do you just get it in now?
Well, back to the Homeland Security thing for a minute, with the page one Washington Post story about morale being being bad. And one of the problems, it seems, is that the confirmation process itself has become so nasty, so acrimonious. And, if you're a Republican, you can blame the Democrats. If you're a Democrat, you say the mean Republicans in the House are doing it. But be that as it may, both House and Senate, it's bad.
It really is. And I think part of it is that I see it a little bit as right now we're looking more at gotcha at trying to score points against the administration, trying to score points against the other party, regardless of which party it is. They're all both trying to score points against the other. And so it sets up a very political fight. And these are political appointees. There's a reason they pick these high profile people. And so part of it is my hope is that there have been some lessons learned by the administration where when you pick a high profile political appointee, you pick somebody with that confirmation in mind that is a really strong candidate.
Yeah, well, The caliber of people we want in public office or that we say we want might be repelled by this whole process.
Well, and that's a good point. I don't know how many people would really want to go and have both sides lobbing shots at them and dragging their name through the mud, regardless of whether they deserve it or not. So I do think we'll see some interesting battles ahead.
Yeah, and I guess from your standpoint, all the things that are pending for federal workers, against them, nothing is good news. No news is good news for you, isn't it?
Absolutely. I like to, most of the time, I like to say that, you know, nothing moving is good news, but I would love to see sometime some, you know, light bulb go on and we all decide to work on workforce management or something in a positive way. But I don't see that happening.
Yeah, right now it's always to trim it, cut it, and raise it, lower it. Okay, thank you, Jennifer. And stick around. We're going to be talking with Andy Medici from the Federal Times right after this break here on federalnewsradio.com.
Together is a beautiful thing. When you become a part of Kaiser Permanente, Together is the biggest benefit. You're now a part of a community that combines care and coverage to keep you healthier and make life easier. Where you can brush aside the chaos in favor of convenience. Where choosing the right doctor is easy and personal. Where advanced technology helps you not just manage your health, but take control of it. When care and coverage come together, we're better able to work together to reduce serious heart attacks by 62% and not just fight chronic conditions like diabetes, but strive to beat them. It's all possible, not because of what we can do or what you can do, but because of what happens when we all work together. Kaiser Permanente, together we thrive.
Kaiser Permanente is ranked number one among private health insurance plans in Maryland, Virginia, and the District of Columbia as ranked by the National Committee for Quality Assurance. Learn more at kp.org/believe.
Based on plan rankings 2013 to 2014, November 12, 2013, Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Here's Bill Lay, Deputy CIO, Department of State, on the Mitigating Insider Threats in Virtual and Cloud Environments, sponsored by HITRUST and Carahsoft.
For insider threat, it's very difficult. Once you're on the network, everybody looks the same. Insider threat really boils down to monitoring behavior, heuristics, finding out is something look askew or out of the ordinary that warrants closer attention.
To listen to the whole program, log on to federalnewsradio.com/insiderthreat. You've virtualized your IT infrastructure and moved to the cloud, and you're realizing the benefits. But do you know what your virtual and cloud admins are doing? HITRUST software helps agencies operate securely in the cloud and protects against insider threat. With HITRUST's automated two-man rule, encryption, and continuous monitoring, agencies can stop insider threats before they happen. Learn how HITRUST can help you know what you don't know. Visit InsiderThreatReport.com. That's InsiderThreatReport.com.
The longest-running intersectional rivalry in the nation since 1927 comes to FedEx Field on Saturday, November 1st, as the Navy midshipmen take on the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame. It's the 88th meeting, and it's going to be a matchup you won't want to miss. Kickoff is at 8 p.m., and both teams will be sporting their new Under Armour uniforms on the field. To secure your best seats, call the Navy ticket office today at 1-800-US-4-NAVY or go to NavySports.com. Again, that's 1-800-US-4-NAVY or go to NavySports.com. 2014 Navy football, game day. The Navy way.
This hour of news is brought to you by Boeing, delivering the enduring capability and value of the P-8A Maritime Patrol aircraft to the United States Navy on time and on budget.
Hiring, workforce training, and continuing budget reductions are just a few of the challenges for federal CFOs. Martha Rubenstein, CFO of the National Science Foundation, discusses how she's tackling these and other issues as part of Federal News Radio's CXO survey and online chat with Jason Miller. You can join the chat and ask Ms. Rubenstein your questions Wednesday, October 1st at noon. It's free. Register today at federalnewsradio.com.
Hey, Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. We're talking with Jennifer Mattingly. She's Director of Government Affairs for Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. And Andy Medici from the Federal Times is going to be joining us now. Andy, are you with us?
Yes, good to be here, Mike.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. We had to skip last week, and we missed having you, but we're back in the saddle here again. Andy, Jennifer and I both were looking at your story on the number of feds killed on the job, and you said the number of feds killed on the job rises again in 2013. So being a federal worker is a fairly dangerous occupation.
Well, in terms of its relation to the private sector, there are obviously some private sector jobs that are more dangerous, and we could list those, you know, mining and
yeah, tuna fishing and cab drivers.
Yeah, but yeah. I think what this represents is that it's more dangerous than I think some people realize. You know, I think a lot of people outside the federal government see the federal government job as, you know, in large part sitting at a desk. And while there are a lot of those jobs, you know, there are dangers to a lot of the federal workforce.
Well, I remember reading some years back that the U.S. Postal Service had a higher rate of either disabilities or disability retirements than the Marine Corps. Marine Corps.
The Postal Service does have a very high rate of employee injury, disability retirement. It's I've heard postal mail carriers talk about what a stressful job it is. It's 8 hours outside, rain or shine, and whether that means it's in the cold on the ice or in the heat of the sun, they still have to deliver the mail, and there's not a lot of time for breaks. So I have heard that complaint a lot.
Well, many police officers will tell you that the most dangerous part of their job is being in a car, a cruiser, for 6-7 hours a day, and that's more likely to have an accident than to have to draw their weapon in the line of duty. So you have many of the postal people who deliver in those right-hand drive Jeeps, and that's dangerous business. And the old thing, the dog biting the mailman, that makes a funny cartoon, but there are some serious injuries every year because of pets and sometimes people attacking postal workers. You cite an incident in November 2013 where a 26-year-old letter carrier was shot several times in Landover, Maryland by an unhappy patron.
Well, that's one of those instances where the Postal Service, part of their mission is universal delivery. They'll deliver to every address. That's just part of what they do. And that means that you can't pick and choose where. If there's areas that are perhaps more dangerous than others, or if there are areas where there have been incidents that have been known to happen, you still have to deliver there. And you're right, spending a lot of time in one of those postal delivery trucks isn't devoid of danger either. They're not exactly built to be faster moving, but they are on every street all the time.
And they stop all the time,
exactly.
Obviously. Well, I see here in your story, it said 17 letter carriers were killed on the job compared to 7 federal law enforcement officers who were killed. I mean, that's a pretty staggering number.
Well, you said it yourself. A lot of these incidents are transportation related. They're in the car a lot. Of course, for law enforcement, when we hear about it, there are high-profile instances, and in 2013, there were 12.
Okay.
And so you hear about those a lot, though. The problem is that individually for federal employees, sometimes you'll hear about it and sometimes you won't. So this story, helped sort of publicize that there are dangers to the job.
Yeah, how it happens almost doesn't matter. Once you're dead, you're pretty dead.
Yeah, and there are a lot of agencies that work hard to sort of reduce those, but you can't reduce it to zero, and I think for a lot of our employees, they realize that keenly.
Jennifer, I know this cause is dear to your heart for a slightly different reason.
Right, and Andy's well aware of this as well. One of the things that Senior Executives Association, FLIOA, the Federal Law Enforcement Officers, American Foreign Service Association, NARF, there's a whole bunch of our groups worked for back in 2011 was to get a law passed that allowed federal agencies to provide a flag for those employees, civilian employees killed in the line of duty, because the government didn't do that. Agencies could, but most of them, it wasn't part of the culture. It wasn't, the authority wasn't explicitly granted. And so OPM just recently came out with regulations 3 years later to finalize the authority for agencies to do this. And we've still been continuing to work to ensure that agencies are building this into their culture. And I think Andy's article, case in point, I mean, there are folks who give up their lives during the course of their duty. And so they should be recognized and, their next of kin should get a flag. And so that's one of the things that we're really pushing on is to make sure agencies are doing this.
They raise the flag over the Capitol numerous times a day in order to give them a way to constituents. They can say this flag, and you put it up and says this flag has flown over the U.S. Capitol. So that's would not be a very costly program to give a flag to a fallen Fed.
Absolutely. And I think part of it is really getting out there, especially with all the negativity about federal government and federal work lately. It's a great reminder of the work that people do for their country. And so that's really why it's near and dear to us, is because it's, people are doing some great things and people unfortunately make the ultimate sacrifice.
Yeah. Andy, we've got a lot of interesting stuff to talk about, but one thing that you worked on this week that just intrigues me no end, we've been so much gloom and doom, but you say the Postal Service is looking at getting into the food delivery business?
That's correct. They're working. They filed a notice with the Postal Regulatory Commission, which sort of has to oversee and give approval of some of these things. But essentially, they're creating a new delivery concept that would involve food mostly, but it could be others where supermarkets or food service companies would drop off essentially a parcel or a freezer bag of food at a postal service location. The postal service would then take all of those packages early in the morning, create a route for them, and deliver the food to people's houses between around 3 and 7 a.m. But they won't knock or ring the doorbell.
So you won't need an Amazon drone to bring it. Your friendly letter carrier could bring it.
I think it's a slightly more realistic version of food delivery.
Well, I see it ads on television for, you sign up for 6 weeks, a 6-week diet plan, and they talk about delivering the food. How is that delivered now? Do you know?
Well, a lot of the foods that are delivered, if they are perishable, are delivered in cold packs. And you might, if you've ever ordered a pie or anything online, the Postal Service does already handle some of those things. This would be more about things that are rapidly perishable, like produce or meats, because they wouldn't stay out longer than a couple hours in these cold packs, and so that should be fine.
Way back in the day, people in rural areas used to order baby chicks for delivery, and you'd get a box of live chicks, and I've seen them in the postal museum, and one of the complaints was if the person wasn't home, they didn't want to leave them out on the porch for a fox or a dog yet, so they would put the chicks through the mail slot. So maybe history will repeat itself.
Well, I think people want fresh food. We'll see how far it goes.
That's fresh. And what else are you working on?
Well, I am also following this recent issue at the VA about a deputy contracting officer who used her influence to pressure employees to award a contract to FedBid. And it reads kind of like a mini soap opera in a lot of ways. There were interpersonal relationships, and there were threatening emails sent, and the whole thing has just sort of been exposed in a recent IG report.
It's interesting. There have been obviously a number of these in government and in the private sector, and often romance rears its ugly head, huh?
Yeah, in this case, part of her motivation was to help someone she was involved with get a job at FedBid. And so that was part of that motivation, and it led to what seemed to be a lot of very bad decisions on her part.
I know you're starting a kind of a lighter side feature for the Federal Times, and it involves interesting people who were former feds, and you're featuring Wanda Sykes, who's one of my favorite comedians, and I knew she was from Prince George's County, but I did not know some of the things you found out about her.
Well, we were just trying to highlight that. Federal employees, there are a lot of career federal employees. There are a lot of people who spend some time with the federal government. And we just wanted to highlight some of those people that became famous after they left federal service or even during federal service. And as you were saying, Wanda Sykes, she was a contracting specialist at the NSA for about 5 years before she became the comedian and the actor that we all like watching today.
Yeah, well, maybe, and Wanda is funny, and she's very smart. Maybe this explains some of what's, since she left the NSA, it just seems to have gone downhill.
Well, that's part of the problem, right, is retaining that top talent. But, I think she would have been a hard person to keep on for too long.
Hey, Jennifer, chime in on this, too, please. Oh, we need to take a break. I'm sorry, we will take a break, and we'll be right back here on federalnewsradio.com talking more about scandal. Okay, ask you about
with your Mayo Clinic Radio Health Minute, I'm Tracy McRae. There's no question that our genetic makeup holds clues about our future health. In a recent study, scientists using data from more than 60,000 women from around the world discovered
41 new genes, all of which individually influence risk of breast cancer.
One of those scientists is Dr. Fergus Couch, who says the job is now to incorporate that DNA information into risk assessment models.
So these would be models that unaffected women would use. They would come into the clinic, and with this information, we might be able to predict who's at high risk, who's at elevated risk of getting breast cancer in the future, and perhaps even a low-risk group who perhaps don't need as much screening, less frequent mammograms, for instance, over the next few years.
Dr. Couch says there's a lot of work ahead, but the potential benefit could be huge. For more information, talk with your doctor or visit mayoclinic.org.
Looking for something fun to do that also supports our troops? Come out to Tyson's Corner October 4th and celebrate the 6th annual Fast Cars and Freedom Classic American Car Show. for Fisher House. Fisher House provides a free home away from home for the families of wounded warriors on military bases across the country. The show runs 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. on October 4th. It's free for spectators. For more information, visit fastcarsandfreedom.info.
And now it's time for another FedGuard Factor, career essentials for federal employees.
Attention federal managers, supervisors, and law enforcement officers. Are you missing out on a key benefit worth thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of dollars? You are eligible to save up to 50% on the cost of professional liability insurance, and FedGuard can show you how. FedGuard can help you take advantage of this benefit and cover you against massive legal fees that may be required to defend you against charges that anyone can levy against you.
Learn more at FedGuard.com. That's FedGuard.com.
In the small town of Elmira, New York, a boy was born into an all-American family. The odds of him achieving his dream in the fashion industry? 1 in 23 million. The odds of having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 68. I am Tommy Hilfiger, and my family is affected by autism. Learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
This is the Defense Health Modernization Report provided by Leidos. Freedom to think forward.
The Department of Defense is seeking a partner to help modernize its healthcare system and transition to an off-the-shelf electronic health record solution to keep pace with rapid advances in health IT. The goal of the new system is to improve healthcare delivery, informed by the most complete information wherever and whenever it's needed, from the Pentagon to the theater of war. One team pursuing the contract, the Leidos Partnership for Defense Health, provides a secure, interoperable, modern open system architecture ready to deploy worldwide to meet the military community's needs for the program.
Formerly known as SAIC, Leidos has a 44-year legacy of tackling the toughest technical and scientific challenges facing our world, from developing healthcare systems for our veterans to advanced protection against cyber threats, giving their customers the freedom to think forward. Visit Leidos.com to learn more. That's Leidos.com.
NCMA's 33rd Annual Government Contract Management Symposium comes to Washington, D.C. November 3rd and 4th. Join 800 government and industry contracting professionals who are building contracting excellence for continued business growth. They'll come together to learn and discuss working through continued budget constraints, acquisition in the future, improving program performance, and much more. Register today at ncmahq.org/NCMA Symposium.
Find every Federal News Radio story and interview on the federalnewsradio.com news stream. A quick look at the latest news as it's posted to federalnewsradio.com.
Hey, Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn, talking with Jennifer Mattingly. She's Director of Government Affairs for Shaw, Bransford & Roth, and Andy Medici, Senior Writer with the Federal Times. And we're talking about scandals and whatnot. And I guess you've got to come back to, and it's fairly recent, the Jeff Neely situation at the General Services Administration. And Andy and Jennifer, please chime in. One of the things it seems to me that sort of highlighted this case was that picture that was all over the internet of him in a hot tub, this high GSA official who had arranged this lavish meeting, as it turns out, in Las Vegas. And he's in the hot tub. Behind him is the Las Vegas skyline. And there's two glasses of wine or two glasses of champagne. I mean, it just one picture was worth more than 1,000 words.
It was. And it really started this trend of scrutiny on federal employees and especially top-level federal employees, because all of a sudden you have an image. You know, it's sort of that, be careful what you post online because it's going to come back to haunt you. But it really, it just was this great image that brought it all home for people, unfortunately. And he's been in the news again with a recent indictment. So,
well, Andy, the social media, you know, people posting pictures of themselves, this is going to get, and I guess it has gotten, a lot of federal workers in trouble.
Well, this is one of those things where people have to remember that what they post online isn't private. And in this situation, you're right. You know, we can talk all day long about, you know, contract typing or about effective management and how you can save money that way or how you can waste money that way. But when people see someone who is hot tubbing it or, you know, with some glasses of wine in Las Vegas on taxpayer dollars, I don't think you really need to explain as much at all as you would for anything else. And I think that makes people upset. So you post something online, people like me or other news organizations will grab it if possible.
Yeah.
And next day you'll see it on the front cover of the Washington Post.
Well, you know, Gary Hart, the presidential candidate, got in trouble because he posed in front of, not only did he pose with a woman other than his wife, but the name of the ship was the boat was the Monkey Business.
Well, that's unfortunate, and I think nowadays you would see a lot of Facebook shares on a photo like that.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Well, back when I first started covering Congress, you know, the Garfield administration, it seems like, but there was one rule, the thought that every member and staff person said. There was a crusading, muckraking columnist for the Washington Post named Jack Anderson, and there was a congressman described as a curmudgeon, but he was smart, he was tough, he was no nonsense, and his name was H.R. Gross, of all things. And the test was, what if Gross finds out about this? What if this appears in Anderson's column? And that seemed to keep a lot of people out of trouble.
Well, I've heard this before from managers, and Jennifer might have something to say about this as well, but I've always heard the advice that how would this look in an IG report? You know, the email mm-hmm. you're about to write and the decision you're about to make, if someone else were to go in and write a report about it and you had to go to a House hearing and defend your actions, how comfortable would you feel? If you feel comfortable, it's just a tough decision, go right ahead. But if at any point you doubt yourself, maybe it's not the right decision to be making.
Optics. It's all about optics. I mean, whether it's how would this look in the media, how would this look to Chairman Issa, how would this look to an IG report? You got to think about your actions. And that's daily life. You know, the Jeff Neely photo is case in point. It actually was a good thing that he posted that because we caught somebody who's being criminally charged with something, you know, to the extent that he was doing something wrong. You want that stuff to come out. You just want to do it in a fair way.
Well, it seemed to me the chronology of that was interesting because it came out, it was a scandal. Then there were some others. The VA had some parties, and I think Homeland Security, and there were some others. And then people started saying, you know, the GSA thing really wasn't that bad after all. And I think two of the people who had been fired were brought back, mm-hmm. reinstated. So obviously something was awry there. And then you kind of think, well, maybe it was a tempest in a teapot and nothing happened. And then, boom, this indictment in, I believe it was Sacramento or San Francisco. And then the picture posted of him.
Well, and the indictment was not just for that GSA conference in Vegas. It was for multiple
right.
different improprieties in spending and use of taxpayer funds. So, you know, so again, that GSA conference scandal, that's why maybe it wasn't as big of an issue. It, you know, highlighted some practices clearly, but it was also part of a individual doing something allegedly that he shouldn't have been doing.
Well, I was talking to my colleague Tom Timmon here, who does the morning drive show, and we saying again and again, people say, don't lie to the government. Yeah, your crime is bad enough, but don't lie about it. Don't lie to the government. And that seems to be the downfall of 80% of these people.
Absolutely. You'd certainly, you know, I mean, do what's right. Again, it's not just optics. It's follow the rules. That's really it.
Andy, in your search for former feds who now are in the entertainment and the other worlds, who's going to follow Wanda Sykes? Who can follow Wanda Sykes?
Well, I always like to point out, Walt Disney, who for a while he worked at the as a mail carrier, and I think what a lot of people need to realize is that the Postal Service is a huge agency, and it has employed a lot of famous people over the years. Abraham Lincoln was a postmaster before he became president, and Steve Carell was a mail carrier for 6 months until his boss told him that he was too slow, and he ended up leaving and I think had found a better fit for his talents. So, you know, there's a lot of people that sort of owe a little bit to the federal government. Walt Whitman worked in the Army Paymaster's Office as a civilian. And Dr. Seuss worked for the Treasury Department, you know, Theodore Geisel. He worked there doing illustrations back when that was a job that needed to be done. So, you know, there are a lot of people that who sort of owe something to the federal government and were able to get a job, get employment, and work, and eventually they became household names.
Well, particularly in the 1930s and the 40s, when the government was the employer of choice, and so many people say that's why the Postal Service was as good as it was for as long as it was, because you had so many people coming in the 30s to get a job. World War II comes along, they get drafted. When they come back, they suddenly have 8, 10, 12 years of federal service, and they went back into the Postal Service. And this was an awful lot of our greatest generation people, men and women, who went in the service. And it's some say it's never quite recovered from that.
Right, and there were a lot of jobs that people could get and an entry level. So a lot of the greatest generation, as we were talking about, were able to get a start. You know, they were able to get some of that experience early on, and a lot of those opportunities don't really exist nowadays.
I'll ask you both real quick. We're about to run out of time here, but the 1% pay raise, that's a done deal, correct?
Unless something really changes, but
yeah.
It looks like it's a done deal.
And we're still watching the cost of living adjustment for retirees. It keeps dropping. I think it's now down to 1.4% from a high of 1.9%. We've still got 1 month to go on that, correct?
Correct.
Yep.
Okay. Anything bad looming in the horizon in this lame duck session?
Well, I just want to remind employees that there's still sequestration-style cuts in 2016. Not next year, but Congress and agencies are already looking forward to that, so expect that to crop up now and again.
Yep, this time next year it'll be really interesting, but right now it's budget. I mean, they've got a CR up at December 11th, so we're still talking agency funding.
And we're not hearing anything on RIFs or very little on buyouts, correct?
And I think everybody's sort of sitting tight to see what happens right now.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Agencies are in a holding pattern until we see how everything shakes out.
Okay. Well, sitting tight sometimes in a place like Washington is not the best, worst thing to happen. Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you, Andy, for being with us. Thanks, Lauren, for working the controls. And we'll see you all here next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Have a good week.